Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast for the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. This podcast will be talking about how the discovery of the fossilized remains of a prehistoric bird is showing a gap in evolutionary theory roughly as wide as the Atlantic Ocean. Our guest is Casey Luskin with the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. Casey, one of the things that you point out in this case of the mysterious Hoatzin is that there's a warning signal that people should look for when they're reading about so-called evolutionary news or new scientific discoveries. Describe for us, what is that warning signal and how did it come about?
Well, this harkens back to a really amusing interview that was given by Eugenie Scott, the executive director of the National Center for Science Education, about 2 years ago in 2009. And she actually was sort of trying to serve as a media coach for evolutionary scientists on how to promote evolution to the public. And she said that when some new line of evidence comes out that basically contradicts some evolutionary hypothesis, you should not admit that outright. Instead, what you should say is something like, quote, this sheds new light on this part of evolution, unquote. So whenever I see somebody saying, oh, this sheds new light on evolution, well, that's sort of a little red flag that maybe I ought to dig a little bit deeper and see if there's some problem for evolutionary theory lurking here beneath the surface.
I found that very curious because one of the whole points of scientific inquiry is that you take the evidence wherever it happens to go, and yet here we're seeing advice to spin, saying if something seems to contradict, instead of pointing out that contradiction, we want to reaffirm the worldview that we've already established.
Well, I mean, Eugenie Scott's organization's stated goal is to promote public acceptance of evolution. So they care very deeply about, you know, media perceptions and PR issues. And so, of course, they're going to not want Darwinian evolution to receive bad PR in the media because that will tend to make people skeptical. So their goal is not to promote an objective, robust debate on the issue. It's to promote a particular partisan approach to science.
And you recently saw these red flags pop up in the case of the mysterious Hoatzin bird, where 17 million-year-old fossils have been found in Africa. Why is that a problem?
This was an interesting fossil find because previously it was thought that Hoatzins, which are sort of an odd bird that's been known for many years, and it's really quite a unique bird, actually, but they were only known from South America, basically, and nobody expected to find Hoatzin fossils in the old world of Africa. And so when these fossils were found in Africa, this sort of raised the question, okay, how did they end up on both sides of the Atlantic? Because the Hoatzin group is thought to be a relatively recent species, certainly within the Cenozoic, the last few tens of millions of years. And so when you find Hoatzin birds on both sides of the Atlantic, you have to be able to count, if you're coming from an evolutionary perspective, of how they got to both sides. The implication is that there should be some migrational pathway in order to explain how these different Hoatzins have sort of shared common ancestry. And so in this particular case, that's a problem because for the last 80 million years or so, Africa and South America were isolated island continents. There was no land bridge between the two continents. And so it's hard to imagine a migrational pathway for Hoatzins on one continent to get to the other.
So all of a sudden you have to account for how this bird gets across 1,000 miles or more of ocean. Couldn't it just fly?
17 million years ago, Africa and South America was separated by thousands of kilometers of ocean. So you're not going to be able to have a bird like the Hoatzin, which really is not a very good flyer to begin with. It's not going to be flying across the Atlantic Ocean. The problem here for Darwinian evolution comes from biogeography. We will often hear when you read textbooks, when you listen to the media, they will say that biogeography is part of this consilience of data that supports universal common ancestry. And the idea is that there's always some migrational pathway to explain how species A is related to species B. You can always explain how species A and species B trace back to a common ancestor and a common point of origin, in fact, in space and time on planet Earth. So the problem is, what if you can't trace a migrational pathway to explain how species A and species B share a common point of origin in Earth's history? And when you get species like this that are separated by vast spaces of ocean, that poses a real problem for proponents of common descent who also want to take the biogeographical evidence and use it to support their theory.
So this is because, obviously, if all life descended from one organism, everything has to have started at the same place. Otherwise, you've got a big problem with your theory.
Yeah, that's right. And so not just in terms of genetic inheritance, you have to be able to explain in space and time how organisms got to various parts of the Earth. Now, most of the time, the biogeographical evidence really doesn't say anything about common descent, just is showing you migration of species over time. But we come up quite often with these quirky examples where you find species in places where it's really hard to explain how they got there if common descent is true. Another well-known example is actually South American monkeys. South American monkeys were long thought to have evolved from African monkeys, and that makes some sense because they have very similar genetic properties. Their DNA is very similar. So if you're coming from an evolutionary perspective, those DNA homologies might imply that they're related. However, when you look at the biogeographical evidence for primate origins, you hit the same problem that we have with the Hodsons. Monkeys appear in South America around 30 million years ago, again, at a time when Africa and South America were separated by hundreds, if not thousands, of kilometers of ocean. And so if you're a Darwinian evolutionist who wants to say that South American monkeys are descended from African monkeys, you have a problem. How do you explain how South American monkeys got to South America? The biogeographical evidence does not fit very well with common descent.
Let me ask you a follow-up. So you've got two different species. Clearly, the South American monkeys there, the primates that you're talking about, they're not going to be able to swim that kind of a distance, and they're not going to be flying like the birds. But if the birds can't fly there, and they didn't cross a land bridge, and the monkeys obviously didn't do either of those things, how do the Darwinian evolutionists explain this? What would it be, some kind of raft?
A determined Darwinian evolutionist is not going to let their theory be falsified by the evidence. They're going to find a way to prevent their theory from being falsified. They're going to put their theory in an unfalsifiable position. And that's exactly what they do when this kind of biogeographical evidence challenges their theory. And they do it exactly the way you said that they would do it. They suggest that monkeys actually floated on rafts across the Atlantic Ocean. And mind you, you can't just have one monkey, or when it gets to the other side, it will die and leave no offspring. You either have to have two monkeys, or perhaps you might have a pregnant monkey, and then, you know, the offspring, I guess the siblings, maybe they will, you know, you'll get some inbreeding there, but at the very least, you'll be able to have more monkeys. And the same goes for the Hodson. You can't just have one Hodson floating on a raft across the Atlantic Ocean. You have to have at least two, or maybe, you know, a mother Hodson with a little clutch of eggs on this raft. Who knows? The bottom line is that these are stretching the credibility of Darwinian theory, but what they show is that people are not treating common descent in a falsifiable manner. This type of evidence should falsify common descent, and instead they're invoking, you know, these really just speculative wild hypotheses of seafaring monkeys and boating Hodsons, you know, rafting across oceans to get to continents that are otherwise isolated by water.
They used to sell sea monkeys on the back of my comics when I was a kid, but I had no idea it was attached to so noble a theory. But what about this idea that maybe it doesn't necessarily falsify the theory, but it's certainly evidence that suggests the theory could be wrong? Maybe there's a mystery reason that they haven't been able to come up with yet. So why do you use the term falsified?
Well, every good scientific theory needs to be at least capable in principle of being falsified. And in this case, we often hear that a supposed consilience between biogeography, basically Earth's plate tectonic history, and alleged evolutionary history provides evidence that evolution is correct. And so people will say, well, species A and species B are related. We know that there was a land bridge that allowed them to arrive at their current locations in Earth's history. Therefore, we can explain that biogeography supports the view that they are related. Well, what happens when there is no land bridge? If the supposed presence of a land bridge provides evidence for common descent, shouldn't the absence of a land bridge also provide evidence against common descent? It seems like the way people treat common descent, there is no in principle way to falsify it with respect to biogeography. They only allow the evidence to support it. They do not allow the evidence to challenge it. So it sort of shows that Darwinian evolutionists are putting common descent in an unfalsifiable position, where even when you find species appearing on isolated continents that were isolated by hundreds, if not thousands, of kilometers of ocean, and there's no way for them to get there, this does not even supposedly provide a challenge to common descent. And it just tells me that evolutionists are not interested in treating their theory in a falsifiable scientific manner.
So this theory of being able to float across the oceans on vegetation poses a number of problems in itself. You have to assume that members of the same species of animal were on the same piece of vegetation and land in the same area, that they survive the trip together, they avoid predators, and find enough food and water to survive.
Yeah, you know, it's a real problem, especially for something like primates, because they have very high metabolisms and need a lot of food and water to survive. So it's not easy to imagine how they're going to make that crossing successfully. These explanations are so unlikely that they are actually referred to by Darwinian evolutionists as a sweepstakes hypothesis. In other words, they're saying that this is like a couple lucky monkeys getting lucky and winning the lottery, winning a sweepstakes. That's the way they talk about it. They use that term because they realize that this is so unlikely, it's going to be a once in every 100 million year event or something like that. And so, frankly, if it's once in 100 million years, how are we sure it would happen at all? They're just making up sort of this idea that it is likely enough to happen. I'm skeptical. And I think that when we look at sort of the substance of the argument and the way that they're logically treating the issue, you can see that they're not willing to have any evidence actually challenge common ancestry. There's a whole list of species that are just like the primates, just like the Hodsons, where they appear in areas where common descent says there should be no land bridge for them to get there. And biogeography is not supporting common descent. So these are not isolated examples. There's a lot of examples like this. Unfortunately, you don't often hear them talked about.
On your blog, you cite a story from the BBC's Science Environment News, where Dr. Croft suggests that, well, we see this actually all the time in modern days, where there's a storm, vegetation's floating down a river, and we see small mammals swept out to sea on that vegetation. So this is why we believe that the flotsam approach is the correct theory. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would respond by saying, first of all, how often do we see this, and how far do we see them getting out to sea? Fine, maybe they can survive for a day or two, but are they going to be able to survive a crossing of hundreds or thousands of kilometers? So we're not just talking about getting blown out to sea. It's easy to get blown out to sea. It's not so easy to make it to a new continent that's an ocean away from you. So this is typical Darwinian argument where you see sort of small-scale evidence, and then they over-extrapolate from that to make some much grander claim. If we were observing animals rafting across oceans, then I would be willing to find this more plausible, or at least rafting thousands or hundreds of kilometers, this would be more plausible. But that's not what we see. We just see occasional things getting blown out. So I don't think they've made their case. I think that people who want to be skeptical have every right to be skeptical.
Yeah, if the occasional black bear would show up and floating on a raft and head into Africa, or if an African lion would occasionally float into the United States or South America, then I'd be impressed. That would be something. So what should, just as a reminder, when people are reading science news, what's the phrase they should watch for?
They say that something sheds new light on some aspect of evolution, then find out. Maybe it is shedding light. Maybe that light shows that it's actually not correct. And you have to dig deeper sometimes to see these things, because as we talked about at the beginning, there really is a PR campaign to promote evolution to the public, and you're not going to always hear about problems for Darwinian theory being talked about in a very straightforward manner in the public dialogue.
Casey Luskin, thanks so much for shedding the light for us.
Hope I did. Thanks a lot.
I hope you've enjoyed this edition of ID the Future. For more information or to support the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, visit discovery.org/CSC.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.